Hello everyone and welcome to Module 12 of Advanced Aromatherapy, Therapeutic Application of Essential Oils for Clarity, Health, and Happiness with David Crow, titled Aromatherapy for Emotional Well-Being, Part 1. This is your host Colleen at the Shift Network. Welcome back to all of you. Just a couple notes. If at any time if you have a technical issue or question during the call on Maestro, you can press 5 on your keypad and I will assist you. If you have any technical questions or problems while using the webcast, please type them directly into the message box and do include your email address so we can reply. Note that next week we will be off and we will meet again with David on Wednesday, December 14th. That covers it for today, so let us bring on David and get started. Welcome, David.
Thank you again, Colleen. Welcome back to everybody. And for those who celebrate the American Thanksgiving tradition, I hope you had a wonderful family gathering or whatever it is that you do. I know a lot of people in this group probably consider every day a Thanksgiving day. I hope that you had some time to study your files, to read through the monographs, and even more importantly, I hope you have had some time to do some blending and mixing and making some formulas and trying them out. Let's go ahead and start off here by opening files because we actually are starting a new topic. I have a few more things to cover from the last module, but we are now starting a series of two modules devoted to the very big subject of emotional well-being, and that of course covers many of the things we've talked about previously, because we have actually been talking about emotional well-being at some level, no matter what the health challenge might be. It always involves our mental and emotional states, and so if we are talking about musculoskeletal aches and pains, then that is linked very much to our emotional well-being. It is both a cause and a result of emotional factors. And likewise, we could say the same thing for all the information we've discussed for women's health issues and for the digestive system and the respiratory system. So we're just continuing on in a certain way. But now we are going to look very deeply at how essential oils work from the standpoint of aromatherapy through the olfactory system, because this is a very different route than inhaling the essential oils into the respiratory system or using the essential oils on the abdomen or using the aromatic plants for the digestive system, as we have covered. So this is one of the major topics of aromatherapy in general, one of the major aspects of aromatherapy that's very important to understand, the link between respiration, the olfactory system, our sense of smell, and the brain, and specifically the limbic system and its relationship to the endocrine system. And through the limbic and endocrine system, the relationship to our mental states, our moods, our emotional states, and also our biorhythms, our sleep, and our immunity. So this will basically continue the exploration, and these modules, obviously, you have seen go progressively into deeper and deeper understanding of the entire field. It isn't like we are just saying, okay, use these oils for this particular symptom. Although we are doing that, that is not all we are doing. We are also building sequentially a fairly large body of knowledge so that we really understand where the oils work physiologically, how they work, what they're good for, what they're not good for, when they're best used, and so forth. Let's go ahead and open some files. So if you are on the course page, you can click on the link for Module 12, Aromatherapy for Emotional Well-Being, Part 1. There's actually nothing that we need to cover from last week in the files. I will mention, however, that You did receive quite a bit of information, and especially several files on roses. And I hope that you enjoyed reading all about roses and have a great new appreciation for that genus of flowers. Let's go ahead and take a look at the files here. There are many files, and that's because we have a few things from the last module to review. We have some things that are going to take us two modules to cover. So plenty of material here. If you can click on the first file, Anxiety and Depression References for modules 1 through 11. Now, this is going to be our starting point for emotional well-being, because if we're talking about emotional well-being, we are talking primarily about the use of aromatherapy and essential oils for various conditions that fall on the spectrum between severe anxiety to severe depression. And that covers a lot of different things, but I wanted to again bring to your attention that we have already learned a lot of this. So I'll come back to this file in just a moment. As long as we're opening files, continue on to the next one, Aromatherapy Studies for Stress, Anxiety, and Depression. So if you could click on that, and you will see that this is an extensive file. Many, many studies are telling us about the use of aromatherapy, especially for stress and anxiety. There are less studies for depression, but they're there. And there are many studies related especially to postpartum depression, which we're going to cover in a future module, aromatherapy for pregnancy in children and the elderly. So if you come back now to the course page, the next file is Emotional Well-Being Therapeutics. That's Emotional Well-Being Therapeutics. And this is the first set of information that I always give when we start a new topic. This is just a review of the categories of essential oils that are generally considered to fit into these various functions. In this case, antidepressant, anxiolytic, euphoric, nervine, relaxant, and sedative. We'll come back to this file in a minute. Let's go ahead and look at the next file, Fragrance and Consciousness. And this is an article that I wrote and then presented a class at a medical conference. This is for your enjoyment and education. There is a lot of information about how fragrance affects consciousness here, not just for humans, but for all kinds of animals, because the sense of smell is very, very important. And actually, the sense of smell for most species other than Homo sapiens is actually more important than it has become for Homo sapiens. And this is an intriguing thing. And it turns out that our ancestors actually had more developed sense of smell. Studies have found that we have lost the capacity for a certain fragrance perception, which I think is a normal thing from living indoors and having a somewhat artificial lifestyle. And people who lived in the environment, much closer to the environment, apparently had more powerful fragrance perception. And this was obviously something that's very important in life biologically. But it is even more important for other species. There are some species that can't even find each other, for example, if they can't smell each other, such as certain kinds of insects. So this is for your amusement and education, and it also gives us a good orientation to what we're going to be talking about for the next two modules. The next link, Fragrance and Consciousness Studies. There are two files on studies that I'm giving here. And this is the second one. This is a summation. I didn't actually give the complete studies with all the medical language and all that. I just summed it up. We'll come back to this. There's a lot of very interesting things here, because we find that not only can we use aromatherapy very effectively for enhancing our emotional well-being, but emotional well-being can have a lot of very practical applications. For example, we find that the fragrance of jasmine mitigates the perception of the workload. That's one of the quotes that's in one of these studies. And I find that a very interesting sort of corporate concept, and actually that has led to some unhealthy applications, because if the corporate world finds out that there's a fragrance that can be pumped into the atmosphere that will mitigate the perception of the workload, then basically what that means is that people will feel relaxed and euphoric, and no matter how much work has piled up, they're not going to be so bothered by it. And of course, then they're going to figure out, well, okay, now we can hire some aromatherapy consultant to come in, and we're going to put these diffusers or these little dispensers on the wall that squirt at you every 30 seconds. But then they're going to find out the price of the true jasmine oil, and what are they going to do? Well, they're, of course, going to go with a synthetic jasmine fragrance that is 1% synthetic fragrance and 99% petrochemical aerosol, and that is what is in those things that are used extensively now everywhere in public buildings, not just in gas station bathrooms, but in hotels everywhere. And actually, this is a whole new trend in aromatherapy that is related to the fact that our sense of smell is connected to our emotional well-being. This is being capitalized on by businesses who now hire consultants to design specific fragrances that will give you a particular emotional feeling when you walk into the business, and that is branded. And so big hotel chains now have a specific fragrance that they use in all of their hotels, and frequently when you walk in, you will not notice it if it is done well. And the reason for that is because it's going to be subliminal information coming into your limbic system that's going to trigger an emotional memory. Oh yes, I know this hotel. Oh yes, it's associated with these pleasant things. And so the limbic system aspect of emotional well-being is actually being exploited for commercial purposes. And of course, if it's not done well, you walk into the hotel and it smells like cheap synthetic strawberry fragrance. And if you are like me, who is a little more, I guess you could say, spoiled when it comes to high-quality fragrances, you will have an aversion reaction as opposed to a pleasant attraction reaction. And that's very much part of what this module is about. Let's go ahead to the next one. We can open up the file titled Herbs to Support Aromatherapy for Women's Health. This is left over from our last module. I'll just touch on this briefly. Sense of smell. This is another article here. Just a summation of the longer article, something to consider. We'll come back to that. Pharmacopeia. Okay, so pharmacopeia, we are now getting into some of the really exotic perfumes, and some of this is left over from our last module. We have a few things to talk about, but that also crosses over into this module, and so it's part of both. And here we have jasmine and neroli and orange and patchouli, a few sample oils for perfumery and emotional well-being. These are things that really are best classified for emotional well-being. They're in the category of what we would call euphorics. Then we have a slideshow, which you can go ahead and open in the PDF form. There's only a few images here, and this will tell us all the details of how fragrance affects our limbic system, basically. This will show the channels of how the olfactory system is activated. And it's a little bit alarming to learn that the brain is less than a quarter inch away from all of those toxic fragrances in the environment. All right, so now we have everything open, and let's go back and finish one very important file from last week, and that is the herbs to support aromatherapy for women's health. So if you could open that up and just follow along here. As you know, for every major topic, I am also giving some generalized suggestions of some herbal remedies that can be used in a very simple way. This is not an advanced aromatherapy class. This is not, advanced herbal medicine class. It is not a clinical herbology class, as the other advanced course that is currently running. It is an advanced aromatherapy course where we look into as many applications of essential oils and as many practical and therapeutic ways as we can fit in to a short period of time. But I have always said that aromatherapy is not a complete form of medicine by any means. Herbal medicine is by far more extensive and complex and diverse and able to address various physiological organ systems much more effectively. We do know, however, from our studies that essential oils have very strong characteristics that make them a primary choice of treatment in many cases. And you know that we have already separated this, and we study this every module when we look at the reports of, you know, what do researchers tell us about how these things actually work. And we're learning a step at a time that, yes, these things do work, but a lot of it is very subjective. And in some cases, it's also strongly confirmed. And so you have heard that essential oils, because they're so closely linked to the air and the space elements, are a very primary important treatment for the respiratory system, but they're a very secondary treatment in a way for the digestive system. Now, when it comes to moods and emotions, we can definitely say that aromatherapy is a primary treatment through the olfactory system. But again, it's very subjective because it's moods and emotions. And moods and emotions can be classified in the studies. We'll see this in a few minutes. There's all these different systems of measuring people's moods and emotions and mental states and stress levels and all of that. But it is much more subjective than actually looking at what happens when you put an essential oil in a petri dish against a specific strain of bacteria, for example. That's objective, clearly objective information. Okay, so let's look at this file here, and I'll just mention the major herbs that are very important, and these are things that are easily available. I've given several sources in past files where you can get various kinds of high-quality organic herbal products. And these can be taken in capsule form, they can be taken in tea form, they can be taken in tincture form. The easiest way, if you don't have a high sensitivity to alcohol, is to just get the tincture form, and the recommended dose just is usually posted on the bottle. Just start with that. And if you are needing some further advice about this, you can certainly contact me through the consulting email. But I just wanted to give this to you because we are now complete with the various oils that we would use and the various methods of using them for the basic kinds of problems that include dysmenorrhea and menopausal heat and so forth. And so you received a lot of information about that, not just in a general sense of groups of oils, but also very specific blends and very specific methods of applications. And so you can also give some feedback, if you would like, on the webcast as we're going along today, if any of you have applied some of those and if you are seeing some good results. I know a few testimonials have come in, and I'll come back to that a little bit later. So the herbs here, just to go through, black haw. Black haw is specific for relaxing the uterus and tonifying it. Okay, so it's an antispasmodic for reducing menstrual pain and also a uterine tonic. This is a very famous North American herb that North American herbalists utilize extensively for gynecological conditions. It's easily available in a tincture in the health food store. Same with cramp bark. It is also regulatory to the menstrual cycle. It makes the menstrual cycle more comfortable. It's a specific herb for polycystic ovaries, PMS. It's also a very important herb during labor and also a uterine tonic. Those are two very famous herbs for gynecological conditions, and those are things that you can take safely. All right, these are not dangerous herbs at all. Start with smaller doses, though. Educate yourself about them. Hops is also an important herb that is specifically for easing PMS and menopausal mood swings. Now, it's an interesting herb because it's closely related to cannabis. It's actually in the Cannabaceae family. And therefore, some people don't get along with it. You can take it in tincture form. It's very, very bitter. It's generally a herb that you would like to take a little bit of at night. You'll find it in sleep teas and so forth. And it helps you get good sleep. But it also has a relaxing effect on the premenstrual tension. Jamaican dogwood is more of a clinical herb, but I'll go ahead and just mention it here because it's very specific for pain. Jatamanzi you have heard about before, but it also comes not just in the oil, but it also comes in herbal form. It's a little bit difficult to find, and it's closely related to valerian, as you know. And so what we can say here is pretty much the same as what you'll see for valerian. It helps with a number of menstrual problems, PMS, and mood swings during menopause. Lavender you are well familiar with as an essential oil, and I will mention that you do not have to take the lavender just as an essential oil and use it that way for aromatherapy. You can also drink lavender flower tea. And lavender flower tea is very good for digestion. It relaxes the digestive system. It is cleansing, purifying, somewhat of a stimulant, anti-inflammatory and so forth, antispasmodic. And it's also very good for PMS, menopausal mood swings, and general well-being for women. Motherwort, as you can tell by the name, is an herb for women. It is a very important herb in general for a lot of things that are related to the nervous system that also overlap with the menstrual cycle and with uterine functions and so forth. And so motherwort is a major herb that helps fight mood swings and alleviates nerve pain, reduces anxiety, panic attacks. It's good for headaches, which of course is a big part of premenstrual tension, liver qi stagnation, menopause, so forth. So motherwort is easily available both in a tea bag form. It goes into a lot of simple blends that you can find in the health food store in tea bag form for general female conditions and women's health. Very, very common herb and very important herb. You can also get it in the tincture form, and taking it in the tincture form, one dropper, you know, a standard dropper for a 1 ounce bottle, in about a quarter of a cup of water is a good dose to start with. And if it's the right herb for you, if you have this combination of this sort of neurological tension combined with hormonal tension, it can do wonders, actually. It's a really, really good herb. Passion flower is another very important herb. And in spite of what it is known for, in spite of the name, the way it sounds, it's not really an aphrodisiac. It says that it is an aphrodisiac in a lot of places, but that's not its major use. I would say if there is anything aphrodisiacal about it, it's because it helps you get good sleep. So it has that connotation, but that's not really what it's about. It's not about passion. It's about lack of passion, meaning that you can forget about the world. It means that your mind becomes so relaxed that you don't worry so much at night. It's a very important relaxant herb. It's very good for relaxing stress and anxiety. It's actually a sedative. It's one of the better non-toxic sedatives. There are some toxic side effects that can build up. If you're taking valerian, you can start to feel groggy in the morning, certainly with medical cannabis or CBD or something like that. You can get great sedative effects, and also with hops, you can get very strong sedative effects, but it can make you feel a bit hungover the next day. And so passion flower is actually very, very nice. And the only thing that you should be concerned about is if you are on medications, passion flower is an herb that you need to study a little bit more if you are taking medication for anxiety and depression especially. So passion flower is a safe herb at general common doses for most common situations, but if you have something that is really more serious, this is one of the herbs that you have to think about herb-drug interaction. There's hardly anything serious about it. It's just that you should know and consider, because some people can develop some adverse reactions if they're on a number of medications and take too much passionflower. Skullcap, another very important herb that is working on the nervous system. And I gave you a few combinations here because milky oat seed tincture is very, very good for long-term stress and nervous exhaustion. With passionflower and skullcap together, it's very good for insomnia when you've got racing mind, heart palpitations, anxiety. White peony and cramp bark you frequently find in a lot of over-the-counter herbal things now in the health food store, and rosemary and lavender for tension headaches. And so you could actually take the rosemary, lavender, and skullcap, make them into a tea for the headaches, and then you could also remember that lavender and rosemary essential oil is good for headaches. That's why I'm giving you this information, so that you can use it along with the essential oils for any of the symptoms that we covered, and you'll get better results than just the oil by itself. Or if you find that the oils are not doing anything at all, you could try these herbal formulas, and you might find that they work a lot better. So valerian, again, just like jatamansi, very good for PMS and for mood swings, and it goes nicely with passionflower and skullcap for anxiety and insomnia and nervousness. Vervain is an interesting herb. It's really more of a clinical herb. Clinical herbalists use it, especially the blue vervain. Now we're getting into real specific clinical herbology, but the blue vervain is really especially good for postpartum recovery and menopausal mood swings and lots of other things. That's a major herb, actually, for anxiety. Wild yam as a herb is very important. People think right away, well, that means that there must be it must be progesteronic. It must have a hormonal component. Well, it doesn't really. It's the source of a precursor molecule that is used to produce a bioidentical cream, okay, a hormonal cream, a progesterone cream. Many products that are coming from diosgenin, this particular molecule, but taking wild yam will have a general supportive effect on the hormonal system, okay? So it does help to reduce menstrual pain, relieve PMS, helps with menopausal effects, and so forth. So it does have an effect directly on the female hormonal and reproductive system, but it's not what people think. It's actually a very important antispasmodic. That's how it's really used by herbalists, is that it's antispasmodic for the digestive system, and it's antispasmodic for the uterus as well. And finally, the last herb here to complement your aromatherapy, wood betony. This herb is very helpful as a pain herb, and its specific function, its specific action that is really highly regarded in Western herbology, is that it can sometimes have really miraculous effects on headaches, head pain, a number of conditions that cause pain in the head, the neck, and the shoulders. But it can also reduce menstrual pain. And so this is a good herb, actually, and quite simple to take. It's actually a member of the mint family. It's an aromatic plant. And so you can get it in tea form. You can get it in tincture form. Okay, those are a few herbs to complement the oils that you have been using. Now let's go ahead and move into a very big subject that I'm just going to spend a few minutes with, and we'll come back to it as we go along. And that is that we would like to know about some of the real exotic, euphoric, intoxicating fragrances, because this is kind of a transition topic from a women's health and well-being into everybody's health and well-being emotionally. Now, this is really touching on the bigger subject of perfumery. And this is not a course on perfumery. And perfumery is a very complex subject. I mean, we could have a full year training in perfumery. But there are a number of oils that you should know about. And these oils have a distinctively different effect on consciousness. And if you remember in an earlier module, when we were first talking about the botanical classifications of the oils, that there was one classification that I called the medicinal flowers. And that included things like frankincense and clary sage and helichrysum and so forth. And there was a second classification, which I called the exotic flowers. And that included things like rose and neroli and jasmine and tuberose and things like that. And as I pointed out at that time, the exotic flowers have medicinal effects. But the medicinal flowers are not necessarily exotic. And you will remember that I clarified that point by saying the medicinal flower oils are generally used for very specific therapeutic medicinal kinds of effects, such as helichrysum for soft tissue injuries or for enhancing circulation or for protecting the skin, lavender for burns on the skin, very therapeutic things like that. The rose geranium we studied in a monograph a couple weeks ago, very specific kinds of medicinal benefits. Clary sage, very medicinal. We touched on it in the last module for women's health. Number one essential oil for helping to cool menopausal heat. Okay, these are medical applications. Then, when we look at the exotic flowers, what we see is that they have those same general kinds of functions. They are still generally classified as anti-pitta, cooling, relaxing, but they also have a significantly more pronounced effect on consciousness. And that is why they have a long history of being used for perfumery, because they are not only exotic smelling, they're also exotic in their effects. And specifically, the way we can define the effect is that they tend to be euphoric in nature, much more euphoric than practically anything else, except some of the spiritual fragrances that we will also talk about. We've already covered some of these, like frankincense and Palo Santo and agarwood and so forth. These can actually produce very significant states of relaxation, euphoria, contemplative moods, and so forth. But the exotic flowers are really connected to sensuality and eroticism and so forth. And so if you will look now at the file that is already open, emotional well-being therapeutics. This is the basic list of groups of oils. And here we see antidepressants. Well, this group of antidepressants includes several of these exotics. And I'll just go through the list here to point out which of these are really important perfume ingredients, okay? Jasmine. This is an exotic oil with an exotic effect on our consciousness. That's a major exotic oil. Neroli is a major exotic euphoric oil. Rose and vanilla, which we haven't talked about, but I will here briefly. Vanilla and ylang ylang. And so now I think you're starting to get the idea of what is exotic. Well, ylang ylang is very, very sweet and sensual. And let's see, anxiolytic. What is exotic in the anxiolytic department? We see neroli, and we see rose again, and we see sandalwood, which is also an exotic oil in the sense that it's extremely expensive. That's another one of the classifications of exotic, is that it is somewhat rare. And then here we see ylang ylang again. Now here, in the euphoric category, I have added a few more things that were not in the previous grouping of euphoric. Agarwood is definitely exotic and euphoric. Jasmine, neroli, rose, and here is a list of the new ones. Tuberose, champa, gardenia, and frangipani. Now, I'm mentioning this because I'm going to come back to this and talk about the use of absolutes for a few minutes, because when we're talking about perfumery, many times we cannot get the essential oil. We are using absolutes, so I want to touch on that in a moment. Let's finish nervine relaxants. Which of the nervine relaxants are exotic in this particular sense? We can definitely say that neroli is one of those. There it is again. Rose, sandalwood, ylang ylang. And sedative, agarwood, very significantly sedative, especially for the mind and meditation. Cistus, this is rock rose. This is another wonderful perfume ingredient. It is found relatively easily both as an essential oil and an absolute, used extensively in perfumery, actually. Jasmine again, neroli again, sandalwood again. So if you take this group of oils that we are calling exotic oils, both exotic flowers and also exotic woods, you can see then that they are found in these five primary categories for emotional well-being. They have antidepressant effects, anxiolytic effects, meaning they calm anxiety, euphoric, which basically cures everything, nervine relaxant, meaning that it helps to relax the nervous system, and sedative. Sedative is a little bit more stronger than nervine relaxant. Now, with that background, let me say a few words about absolutes, because this is how these exotic florals are frequently found, and this is something to be aware of, because there can be some real quality control issues. Now, you will remember from one of our first modules, I believe it was module 2, where we were talking about the distillation process and so forth, there was mention of various extracting techniques, and absolutes was mentioned. So you already have an introduction to what an absolute is. Now, an absolute simply means that the flower or the plant material in general is extracted with something other than steam. Steam distillation is the primary method of getting essential oils. But there are many constituents in plants that won't come out in steam. And there's a variety of reasons for that. Tuberose, for example, is a very waxy flower. And so you can steam it all you want, and it's not going to give you very much in terms of essential oil. So the perfume industry is based heavily on using solvents, and there's a variety of solvents, and the solvents can be anything from completely non-toxic to heavily toxic, and that's why I want to mention it. So the safest type of extract is called a CO2, a carbon dioxide extract, and in this particular method, what happens is that something like roses, tuberose, jasmine, whatever, is put into the extractor, and then it is sealed up, and it is pumped full of pressurized carbon dioxide. Now, when carbon dioxide is pressurized, it becomes a liquid, and so the liquid is forced through the plant material at certain atmospheric pressures, and depending on the atmospheric pressure, different constituents of the plant will come out. And so this is used extensively now by the food industry to extract certain kinds of things, because every company wants to have a brand recognizable taste and fragrance. And so that means that the ginger that goes into your ginger beer has to be the exact same thing for millions of bottles of ginger. And so it is extracted in a very specific way that takes out certain constituents. Now, in the perfume industry or the essential oil industry, you can find very high quality CO2 extracts of a variety of things. We've carried them in the past, and they're very, very nice. When the pressure is, when you are done extracting, then you release the pressure, and the carbon dioxide returns to a gas, and it's pulled back out again. And so there is literally nothing that remains in the extract. It's completely non-toxic. So a CO2 extract is a very desirable type of extract to have from the toxicity standpoint. There are also extracts that are done with food-grade alcohol. This is common, like if you go to the store and you buy a vanilla extract. That's like a tincture. And so alcohol is a solvent, and a high-quality organic food-grade alcohol used as a solvent is what's used as the solvent for extracting herbal tinctures. Okay, so sometimes you can see an alcohol extract as well, and sometimes then the alcohol extract is then distilled out. The alcohol is taken out, and so you can find some of these. This is one way that I have seen vanilla done, for example. They take the alcohol tincture of vanilla and they evaporate the alcohol out, and you are left with a pure extract of vanilla, which is very high quality and food grade. Now, the thing that's important to remember here is that a lot of the absolutes that are on the market are going to be solvent extracted. And those solvents are not always going to be very high quality, and they're not always going to be extracted or evaporated or separated out efficiently. Now, this is something to put into perspective, because if you look at it from a qualitative standpoint, then right away you're going to say, well, all right, here's this rose absolute that I found, and that's how most rose is actually extracted, is by a solvent. You say, well, what was the solvent? It was hexane. Well, hexane obviously is a toxic solvent. Well, let's look at the numbers here. Most rose that is used in perfumery purposes is from the absolute. And why is that? Because you get a considerable higher yield than from steam distillation. Now, is the hexane really an issue? Okay, so it's not going to be found in the rose absolute in any significant amount, because it is also pulled out, evaporated out, extracted after the extraction process. And so will there be residues of hexane? Well, that's where the quality control comes in, and a really high quality absolute will have some residues, but it will be parts per million, okay? And at that particular level, you might even be talking about all kinds of other things that are going to be contaminating the roses also, like the pesticides or maybe even radionuclides from Fukushima. So it's very minute amount of contamination that's going to be found, but at the same time, you do not want to ingest hexane extracts. Okay, that's just a good common sense thing. Now, on the other hand, let's look at it a little bit further here. You take something that may have residues in parts per million, and then what the perfume industry is going to do is it's going to use that in a very small amount in something that's highly diluted, and most perfumes actually are about 70% alcohol. So if it's going to be put into something else, then the residue amount is going to go down even further to possibly parts per billion. And at that point, we're not really talking about things that are going to have major impacts on health. So I'm mentioning this so you know a little bit more about absolutes, because the list of things that I gave you for the exotics, those are all things you can still find in pure essential oil form. You can find pure essential oil of rose, but mostly what's out there is rose absolute. You can find vanilla in a pure form, but it's also an absolute. And many, many things in the world of perfumery are actually absolutes. And that's why I added at the end that specific list of those exotic flowers. And this is a question that comes up many times, and so I wanted to address it here. And that is, with species such as tuberose and champa and gardenia and frangipani, you almost never find these in a pure botanical form. And the reason for that is because you need so much plant material, so many flowers harvested at exactly the right time, that when you do find even a pure botanical Absolute. That's very, very high quality. It is unbelievably expensive. Mostly what you find is synthetics of these flowers. That was the entire point that I wanted to make here. Now, I wanted to give you a few simple ideas for some euphoric types of blends for perfumery, and this will take us into the topic of our emotional well-being, because the use of these euphoric flowers and woods is one of the best examples, actually, in aromatherapy of plants that really have a significant impact on our mood and emotions. Now, everything that we have studied up to now has some impact on our mood and emotions. There's no doubt about it. But these are the ones that we could say have by far the most pleasant, euphoric, uplifting, antidepressant, and anti-anxiety effects. And that's the focus, really, of these two modules, is how to get out of anxiety and depression. And so intoxicating perfumes is something we should definitely consider. Let's look at a couple of the things that are frequently used. Vanilla is very common as a perfume ingredient. And, of course, people can just get pleasant body sensations just thinking about the fragrance of vanilla. Now, vanilla is a very wonderful, sweet, intoxicating kind of fragrance, and it's a base note in perfumery, so you don't need very much. And just to give you a few ideas about blending here, some people like vanilla so much that they would just like to smear it all over their bodies, and that's perfectly acceptable, but you don't need to do it in a highly concentrated form. My suggestion is you can get a food grade absolute. That is what we have carried in the past. Food grade absolute. One drop of vanilla absolute in several tablespoons of a carrier oil without a strong carrier fragrance is what you want. So an almond, coconut, something like that. It is a very strong fragrance. You do not need very much. And you can then use that as a body oil. A lot of people like to do that. So you can use jojoba for that also. And I'll mention that vanilla and sandalwood go nicely together. And sandalwood is much softer and sweeter. The vanilla can kind of overpower it, so maybe one part of vanilla, two parts of sandalwood. And that combination is frequently found in perfumery along with citruses. And so you might want to, say, put one part of vanilla, two parts of sandalwood, and maybe two parts of a citrus, like bergamot or something like that. This can make a very nice kind of perfume. You could just blend those, actually, just as the pure essential oils. Because a lot of the exotic oils, you know, they're so expensive that you don't want to use a lot of them. And you also can use them as single note perfumes or direct application, because a lot of these are actually quite safe for the skin. So if you were to actually just put two drops of sandalwood and two drops of neroli, for example, take those with your disposable pipettes and just put them into a little container, mix those up, you could just apply that directly. And it would be an incredible perfume. And the sandalwood and the vanilla would act as a very nice fixative for the neroli there. So these are just a few ideas, about blending. But you could also stretch that out. You could take that and you could stretch it out and put it in jojoba. So we also find that a lot of these exotic oils are also very helpful for depression, PMS, and a lot of times that they can be used therapeutically for things we talked about in the last couple modules. And so rose oil, for example, I covered extensively and talked about its importance in women's health concerns and specifically in anxiety and depression. And so you can make a nice blend of rose and clary sage and bergamot. And, of course, that is very flexible how you want to do it. What I would do if I was putting proportions together here, I would say probably start with equal parts. You could do equal parts, but the rose eventually will come out over time as being a lot stronger, and the clary sage and the bergamot will kind of mellow down a little bit. This is all very flexible. It's a very inexact science. So you could actually increase the clary sage to two parts and the rose and the bergamot, one part each. Very flexible, but that's a nice little combination. And then we get into the flowers, and jasmine, of course, in perfumery is so important. They say no jasmine, no perfume. And jasmine is a very strong fragrance, but it blends very, very nicely with neroli. So you could actually try jasmine and neroli by itself, or you could try jasmine and neroli and sandalwood. What would you like to do? Well, sandalwood's a base note again. Neroli's a top note. Jasmine is also a top, a base to a middle note. So how about you could do one part jasmine, two parts sandalwood, three parts neroli. I'm just making these up based on my olfactory memory. And that would probably give you something very nice. You can also find other kinds of exotic flowers other than the ones that I mentioned. Like, for example, you can find linden blossom. That's a wonderful, beautiful absolute. It's very difficult to find, however. But that would make a really nice perfume if you mixed it with neroli, sandalwood, and so forth. Let's see, a couple other things that I wanted to just mention here in the perfume department. That's just to get you started. We'll come back to this again in a future module, but I just wanted to open up the topic of these exotic substances, and I think that's enough for now, for our time. So now, let's take a look at what we would like to do next. So now we've transitioned into our big subject, and before we look at our slideshow, why don't we go ahead and look at the references from past modules that have to do with our emotional well-being, because that is what this topic today and in the next module will be also. So if you can go back to the first file that you opened, anxiety and depression references. Anxiety and depression will be the primary focus, and that will give us a really good way to understand not just classic anxiety and depression, but a lot of different things as well, because anxiety and depression come in countless forms, and it's a good starting point. Now, if we look through this file, what you're going to see is that we have already learned a lot about essential oils and aromatherapy for our emotional well-being, and I'm just going to touch on these, and I'm going to tell you things that I think are primary and things that I think are really secondary. So you learned about bergamot. That was one of the first essential oils in Module 3. And you learned that it's very soothing to the nervous system. It fights stress and anxiety, helps with sleep and insomnia, gives good rest. And I would say bergamot is a major oil for emotional well-being. And it also is a nice ingredient for perfumery. You can put it in with the exotic oils. It mixes nicely with jasmine, it mixes nicely with sandalwood, and so forth. Now, clove, there was also a reference here. Basically, I just did a search through all those monographs for anxiety and depression, and what we see here with clove is that it has an anti-anxiety kind of effect. It fights stress, but this is a very different approach because when we look at clove, it's a really hot, stimulating spice. And is that going to be good for anxiety? Well, in a certain way, and it takes us back to the topic of maybe the herb itself would be a little bit better, because when people have vata conditions, according to Ayurvedic medicine, and they're overstimulated and they're anxious, their nervous system is weak and depleted, frequently warming herbs are very beneficial. Now, the fragrance of clove by itself, I would not classify as a major oil for emotional well-being. I would say the clove as an herb cooked with certain kinds of preparations would probably have more of an anti-anxiety effect. On the other hand, could it possibly be a warming stimulant for a person who is depressed? Yes, and here's a very important basic principle. Things that are cooling and relaxing, like the flower oils, are generally the things you think about first for anxiety. The things that are warming and stimulating are generally the things you think about first for depression, because a depressive state is a yin state. It's a state of stagnation. It's a state of darkness, of withdrawal, of isolation. It needs energy. It needs warmth. It needs sunshine. It needs spices. On the other hand, anxiety needs to be cooled down and calmed. All right. Frankincense is an oil that we have touched on many times in different ways. It is known to help to fight stress and anxiety, reduce nervousness, soothing and calming, very supportive to good mental states, also helps with migraines, headaches, insomnia, sleep, and so forth. I would classify frankincense as a major oil to use in your diffuser to help you with both anxiety and depression. A major oil to use in your blends for your bath, for your massage, and so forth. Also, a major ingredient in any kind of ceremonial or ritual use of plant materials, such as burning a piece of frankincense tear, a piece of frankincense resin on a coal, which is a very nice little ritual, and that's a classical way of getting the aromatherapy from it. Lavender. We spent quite a bit of time talking about lavender, so you already know all the studies and what it does for the nervous system, stress, and insomnia, and specific for headache, fights anxiety, nervousness, and all of that. Lavender, I would say, is a primary essential oil for emotional well-being. Tea tree. Well, tea tree is not something that most people would think about as a primary essential oil for emotional well-being, and yet we find that it has tonifying, strengthening properties. And tonifying, strengthening properties are always good for depression and anxiety. It's a very fresh, awakening, enlivening, almost coniferous menthol kind of fragrance. And those types of oils also can have an effect. Let's keep in mind that aromatherapy in general is highly subjective unless it is being used, for example, to put the tea tree on your toenail fungus. All right, well, that doesn't need to be subjective. That's an objective thing. But when we're talking about moods, it becomes very subjective. And so therefore, I'm going to say that aromatherapy in general, as long as you enjoy the fragrance, it is probably going to have some benefits for you. Now, having tea tree in your diffuser is going to be something you think about more if you have a cold or a flu or a sinus infection. But you might find that if you have a cold or a flu or a sinus infection, that it not only helps your respiratory system, but you might find yourself in a better mood anyway. So this is how we might find tea tree to be beneficial. Now, some specific things in the respiratory category, modules 4 and 5, inula. This is actually a fairly rare and expensive oil. We are bringing it in, however, but it does have a significant stress and anxiety benefit, and also calming to the nervous system. And that's one of the reasons why it's so effective for asthma as well. It's not just a major expectorant and decongestant. It's calming to the nervous system. Monarda, same. And here I'm going to give you a recipe. You can see I just pulled that out from the monograph. Calming to the anxiety and the nervousness, strengthening to the nervous system, and good for the sleep and all of that. But that's so important in so many respiratory conditions. And again, asthma and allergies, primary thing that Monarda essential oil is good for. Myrtle, another example here of a respiratory oil that is more stimulant, green, fresh, coniferous, and so forth. It's reviving, but at the same time, it has a relaxing kind of effect. So it's both stimulant and relaxing, and we know that essential oils are paradoxical in that particular kind of way. Module 6 and 7, the spices, black pepper, cardamom. These are the warming spices, peppermint, I'm sorry, black pepper, obviously more warming, cardamom, more aromatic, less warming. These would not be major oils, in my opinion, for emotional well-being, but supportive, okay? Again, if you put cardamom in your diffuser because you have a respiratory infection, it will be wonderful for the respiratory system. If you and chew on the seeds, it will be wonderful for your digestive system, but it will also have a subtle kind of uplifting effect that's going to clear some anxiety and maybe make you feel a bit better. But it's not a primary oil that I would say, well, reach for right away if you have depression. On the other hand, chamomile is definitely a very significant calming, relaxing oil. And we've talked about chamomile quite a bit. Very good for the menstrual pain, the menstrual cycle in general, specific for postpartum depression, and specific also for sleep and insomnia. Again, headaches, specifically migraines. And now you should know, if I ask you what's the major herb to complement that, you would tell me wood betony. Very good. Fennel. Okay, good. Fennel, as we know, is a major women's essential oil, which is very interesting because it's a major digestive herb. And this is something that's very different between herbology and aromatherapy. In herbology, fennel is not widely used for gynecological problems. If at all, it's a very gentle support for the digestive system. However, Chinese medicine recognizes that it has a variety of other kinds of effects. It's good for urination in the bladder and good for the eyes and, you know, a number of other kinds of things. But in aromatherapy, it is definitely regarded as having those powers on the digestive system, as we know. It's one of the main things that, you know, we talked about, you know, doing abdominal massage and compresses with. But we also learned that fennel was one of the main oils that was used in almost every kind of menstrual complaint. And so it's very good in that department, and that's something that sets it apart from herbal medicine in the world of aromatherapy. And because it has all those benefits for the female hormonal cycle, it's also going to be very beneficial for moods and emotions. Now, grapefruit, all the citruses are happy oils. All the citruses are going to have calmative anxiety and effects. That's one of the things we're going to see here with our studies here coming up shortly. Lemon balm, we touched on extensively for supporting memory, cognitive function, counteracting neurodegenerative disorders, and so forth. And so this is a major essential oil for mood and emotions. Peppermint, I would say, yes, it can be mood uplifting oil. Again, you know that I'm very conservative about its use. Tulsi is an excellent essential oil, but very, very strong. It will definitely have a strong effect in a diffuser for strengthening your pranavata, the energy of your brain and nervous system. Also, highly dermotoxic, very rich in eugenol. It's almost the same as clove oil. Keep that in mind. Birch, wintergreen, I would not advise using these. I just included these because they will come up if you do that search for anxiety and depression. Please don't use these for anxiety and depression, even though the world of aromatherapy says, yes, they do have anti-anxiety and antidepressant kind of effects. But we know that these are oils that need to be used very cautiously in very, very low concentrations, highly diluted, for limited periods of time, for very specific musculoskeletal problems. So even though they may have an effect on boosting your alertness and mental clarity and calming you down as a secondary side effect, don't use these oils for this particular purpose. Do not put these in the diffuser and go to sleep. Helichrysum, yes. Helichrysum, on the other hand, is very, very nice, and it has beautiful mood-enhancing kind of effects. And I'll say if you want to get the real helichrysum mood-enhancing effect, go to Corsica in the fall. I'm sorry, go to Corsica in the middle of the summer when the flowers are blooming. Wander around in the hillside and get that beautiful fragrance, not just of the helichrysum, but lots of other things are happening there too. The myrtle is going off. Sages are going off. Many, many things are blooming, and it creates an intoxicating atmosphere that Corsica is known for. Marjoram, yes, definitely a very important herb and essential oil for emotional well-being. And as we know, it's a major oil for musculoskeletal problems and also for calming the nervous system. And so a few more here in Module 10, clary sage, major essential oil for emotional well-being. Geranium, major oil. Rose and ylang ylang, major oils, extremely important oils for emotional well-being. These cross over, of course, from female concerns, women's health issues, to emotional well-being for everybody. Finally, in the last module, Jhadarmanzi. Very important for emotional well-being, but this one is a little bit tricky for some people. It is the best oil for some people with chronic insomnia, but for other people it will just make them feel anxiety and insomnia. So it's a member of the Valerianaceae family, and those are a little bit, they have a kind of trickster kind of personality, where they will do exactly what they're famous for most people most of the time, but occasionally they'll just do the exact opposite. So a little bit of idiosyncratic effects from Jhadarmanzi, as you learned. Mandarin, again, is one of the citruses. So everything that's said about mandarin here, or bergamot, or grapefruit, or neroli, all of these things, they're all basically happy oils, major oils, not as a primary oil, but very important as supportive oils to put in your diffuser, in your blends, for example. Vetiver, major oil for emotional well-being. And this is an underrated oil, in my opinion. Vetiver is very safe to apply as a single note perfume to the pulse points. It's also found as an attar. And you can make your own attar if you have sandalwood. You can just blend the vetiver together, and that's basically all an attar is something that is infused into a base of sandalwood, and that's a classic Indian kind of preparation. And so I would say maybe one part vetiver and three parts sandalwood would be a really nice simple blend, and the sandalwood makes it even sweeter. And the vetiver, with its rich earthy fragrance, has so many wonderful benefits for the emotions. I would definitely include vetiver as a major essential oil for emotional well-being. All right, now, before we go into looking at some of the studies, why don't we go ahead and discuss the process of olfaction first, just so you can understand some of the language that we're going to be getting into here. So if you would go back to the file that is open, which is the slideshow, the PDF, let's go ahead and open that. Take a moment here, give everybody a chance to get on the same page. And this is a depiction here showing a side view of our sinus cavities and the brain. And the thing that is really dramatic here, and very, very important, if you will look at that image in the left, look how close the brain is to the sinus cavity. All right, and then you'll see that little square, and that square then is blown up on the right-hand side. And if you will look on that blown-up square, you will see the bone, which is the cranium. And you will see on the right-hand side that it is called the cribriform plate. Now, that's all that separates the brain from the outside world, is the cribriform plate, which is about a quarter of an inch thick. But then, if you look at the cribriform plate, you'll see that it's all full of holes. And the nerve endings are coming to the olfactory receptor sites. So, this means that the brain actually has relatively little protection from the outside world. And this is something that I always found extremely important and significant from the beginning, even before there was any real discussion about this. And this is something that I mentioned was kind of a clue for me. Almost 20 years ago, I heard that neurodegenerative disorders cause loss of smell. And I found that particularly intriguing. Now, this is being developed a lot more, and now there's these olfactory tests to determine the predisposition or the stage of development of Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, because neurodegeneration is then reflected in poor functioning of the sense of smell. Now, where I went with this in my mind, as I told you when we discussed using essential oils for restoring the sense of smell, my thought was, well, if that's the case, then it makes sense or it would be logical to assume that using fragrance could stimulate the olfactory system in such a way that could reverse neurodegeneration. And that's what is being implied when we look at the studies concerning things like lemon balm that say that it activates the acetylcholine receptor sites. So this is a very interesting thing that came to my attention quite a long time ago, and the implication of it now is increasingly important. And another piece of information I gave you recently was that a study came out that I saw just a couple of months ago that has now confirmed that it is air pollution that is one of the primary causes of Alzheimer's and dementia. We're literally losing our memory. We're losing our brain function because of low quality air. Now, this is something that anybody who has traveled in an undeveloped country and been exposed to a lot of diesel smoke and dust and all of that really toxic atmospheric pollution can attest to, is you can feel it in your head. You get headaches from it. You get sinus infections. But if you look at this image, it will tell you why. It will tell you that there is literally practically nothing that is keeping the brain safe from the outside world. And this is also how the essential oils and aromatherapy work. So let's just go through this. If you go down to the bottom right, you will see what's labeled as odorant molecule. And the odorant molecule comes in contact there with the mucous membrane and the receptor sites. And the receptor sites, you'll see, are the long, sort of tan-colored, blue-colored things. They're the blue cells. Those are the olfactory receptors. And we'll have another image coming here shortly. But basically, the odorant molecule acts as a trigger to the receptor site. And a molecule is a kind of energy. It's chemical energy. And the chemical energy is then converted at the receptor site into electrical energy. So what we can say then is that energy becomes energy. And if we want to get really cosmic about this, we can say, well, that odorant molecule is actually created by botanical energy using the elemental energy of earth, water, fire, air, and space that originated from solar energy and lunar energy. And that's correct. It's absolutely correct. And we talked about that a little bit when we talked about the celestial origins of essential oils. I mentioned that it's the sun and the moon that control the life of the plants, and that's what creates the aromatic molecules from the soil and the water and the sunlight and so forth. And so those odorant molecules are a form of chemical energy. When they come in contact with the receptor site, it becomes a form of neurological energy. So solar energy becomes botanical energy, which becomes chemical energy, which becomes neurological energy, which then becomes consciousness. Okay, I hope you enjoyed that little tangent. Now, the nerve current is then passed upward through the through the olfactory receptors into the olfactory nerves. And you can see that that is listed there on the right-hand side up higher, the olfactory nerve. And the olfactory nerves pass into the olfactory bulb. Now, the olfactory bulb is part of the limbic system. And so the limbic system, as I'm going to unpack quite a bit more probably next week, is how we get the link between fragrance and memory, the link between fragrance and emotions, the link between fragrance and emotional memory, the link between fragrance and mental states, the link between fragrance and moods, the link between fragrance and biorhythms, and the link between biorhythms and sleep, and so forth. It all starts by the neurological energy passing upward through the olfactory nerves into the olfactory bulb, which is actually part of our brain. And so over on the left-hand side, you can see, again, a smaller depiction of the olfactory bulb, and then you will see that the olfactory bulb flows upward through the olfactory tract into the center of the brain. Okay, that's how we have fragrance and consciousness linked. Now let's go to the next image. And this is just unpacking this a little bit further. I've given you the entire description here. But basically you can see again the olfactory receptors hanging out there in the mucous membrane of the capillary bed, I'm sorry, of the mucous membrane of the sinuses, passing through the bone tissue into the olfactory bulb again, and then following on over this way to the right, takes you to the limbic system and the cerebral cortex. Let's go to the next image. Now we see what this actually looks like physically. All right, these are the nerve endings that's hanging out there in your mucous membrane. That's where the sense of smell originates, very tiny. And this next image, the green and blue, kind of Christmassy looking image, is actually what it looks like in terms of the electrical energy. Okay, and so you can see the red is really like the receptor sites firing electrically here. Okay, so that depiction then is drawn by an artist in the next image, and you can see a kind of cartoon-like image here where you can actually see the nerve endings, the receptor sites, hanging out, waiting for you to give them something nice to perceive through your diffuser. And then the next image with the A up on the top is just another type of scanning image of exactly the same thing. This is what the inside of your olfactory epithelium looks like. That's the tissue that has all of these receptor sites in it. And so finally, you'd like to look at the last image here, and all of these things that look like confetti, I guess, or something like that, you know, these paper strands or whatever, these are actually these are actually aromatic molecules. This is what comes into the receptor site and triggers it. Now, let's look at the last image here, and this will give us an overview of what happens. And this is where we see the link to the limbic system. So the olfactory neuroepithelium, that's basically where the nerve receptor sites are at. That's over in the bottom left. You can see a detail there in that little square on the upper left, olfactory receptor cell. Same information I told you, but now we can follow the pathway. So the nerve current, it's not the essential oil molecules that are going into the brain, okay? It's the electrical energy stimulated by the chemical energy, which is made of the solar and lunar energies. And that electrical current then, if you follow this pathway, it's going to flow into these different glands of the brain. They're going to flow into the thalamus, they're going to flow into the hippocampus, and so forth. This is the limbic system, and this is where the nerve current, stimulated by the fragrance, has its primary effect in our consciousness. All right, I hope you found that interesting. And I'm going to unpack that quite a bit next week. But in the meantime, I would like to refer you to the specific file titled Fragrance and Consciousness. This is the article. And in that article, on page 4, you will see, and you don't have to follow me here, just keep this in mind. Read through this article as part of your homework and deepening practice. This will give you very good introduction to a very complicated subject. You'll see a paragraph starting, "The role of the olfactory bulb in mood, immunity, and neurological degeneration." This is an extremely important piece of scientific information to grasp if you want to understand how aromatherapy works. It works through our olfactory bulb, and our olfactory bulb, because of its connection to the rest of the limbic system, is profoundly connected to our mental and emotional well-being. And so basically what we are talking about when we are smelling beautiful fragrances is we are talking about giving our olfactory bulb, and specifically our greater limbic system, some kind of very positive natural stimuli. And this is important to consider because we are surrounded with so many toxic fragrances, and we cannot underestimate the effect of toxic fragrances in the home, indoor pollution, around us, industry, air pollution in general, smog, sitting in traffic, all the chemicals coming from the printer at your office. I mean, there's countless things that affect the olfactory bulb, and that in turn has a profound effect on our moods, mental states, and emotions. So this information is a continuation of what I was telling you about the link between neurodegenerative disorders, a little bit more information about that. And then just continue on, you'll see things like essential oils for olfactory dysfunctions, neurological degeneration, and so forth. And then you'll have a review if you continue going with this, because a lot of the things we're talking about with fragrance and consciousness, we have already introduced. And so this is just further, deeper knowledge that you will get, and so some specific information about concentration, memory, and learning that I've already started to talk about. Okay, now let's switch over to another file. I'll give everybody a couple of seconds here to do this. And let's now look at the studies. Okay, since we're running out of time and we have such a huge amount to cover here, let's just go ahead and very briefly review these files, and I'll tell you what they're about. You can read through them, and then we will unpack them further in the next module. So if you look at the aromatherapy studies for stress, anxiety, and depression, okay, that's the next file, aromatherapy studies for stress, anxiety, and depression. Now, as I mentioned when we first opened this up, there are actually a lot of studies about aromatherapy and anxiety and aromatherapy and stress. And this is a good thing. And the mechanism of how the oils work is also being explored quite a lot. Not just that they do something, but how they do something. This is a very big concern of researchers. They don't want to just know, all right, it does this, but they want to know how. So there's far too much information to cover here. So I'm just going to give you the first overview and invite you to read through these. But the first classification is mostly studies on anxiety and stress. And I think that everybody already knows, since you've already been doing aromatherapy, that it is relaxing. Well, in that sense, science doesn't tell us anything we don't know. Science is just confirming what we know. Science is telling us that nice smells help us to relax. That's all. It's not a great revelation. But the details of it are very important to understand. So here's one. And a lot of the research is actually being done because medical researchers are looking for specific solutions to problems that allopathic medicine is not able to deal with. So number one, the effect of aromatherapy on anxiety in patients. Well, if you look at this, who are these patients? Well, these are end-stage renal disease patients. Of course, anxiety is going to be a major concern. And they don't want to just be pumping these people full of anti-anxiety medications because they have renal disease. So they look at aromatherapy. And this particular study, which is always educational to see how they did it, they were using rose water. They're not even using rose oil. They're using rose water, which is extremely dilute. And what do they say? It noticeably reduces the anxiety of hemodialysis patients. And therefore, it can improve the patient's emotional and spiritual condition. Now, we know that rose water is relatively affordable, and we know that rose water is very, very safe and good for the skin. What I would say from a study like this is, well, why don't we give ourselves some regular applications of rose water, and we don't have to be an end-stage renal patient to get the emotional benefits. As a matter of fact, the healthier we are, the more these benefits are going to be pronounced. Now, here's a nice one. The effective inhalation of essential oils of tuberose. on anxiety in students. Well, those are some lucky students because tuberose essential oil is really expensive and rare. But what is the conclusion? The results showed that aromatherapy with essential oil of tuberose was effective in reducing test anxiety. And that's great. I wish when I was a student and had test anxiety that somebody gave me tuberose, I probably would have gone into the field of aromatherapy right then and there. I would have just said, well, forget about this degree. I'm just going to be an aromatherapist because tuberose smells so great. How about the next one? Effective inhalation aromatherapy with lavender oil on stress and vital signs for people undergoing coronary artery bypass surgery. So again, we see this kind of medical, very severe kind of anxiety condition. And conclusion, inhalation aromatherapy, had no significant effects on mental stress except systolic blood pressure. Well, now how do we explain this? And this is perfectly fine and important. You know, I'm not going to just show you results that are all good. We also have to understand that in many cases, these things don't work. And so we can say here, all right, maybe it was the way the test was done. What did they do here exactly? Okay, they got a face mask coated with lavender for 5 minutes. Well, that's a pretty good dose, but maybe these patients have more anxiety, very understandably so, than lavender is actually good for. So you now have a little quiz. What's the first thing that comes to mind? Lavender wasn't strong enough. You heard a study before about this. Something that's much stronger. Good. It's clary sage. And so maybe these patients need clary sage in their mask instead. Let's look at essential oils and anxiolytic aromatherapy. This is just an overview of a lot of the oils that have been studied. And so this is a group of oils. I've already mentioned most of these, but these are the main oils that are being studied for anxiolytic oils and popularly used as well. Lavender, rose, orange, bergamot, lemon, all the citruses again, sandalwood, clary sage, Roman chamomile, and rose geranium. Okay, so these are just a few things that are mentioned. Now, I'm just going to give this to you as a little homework assignment, but we will come back and look at this a little bit more because there's so many things that show us that aromatherapy is definitely a primary treatment for our emotional well-being. Lavender on dental anxiety, dental patients' anxiety. Let me just scan the titles here. Anxiety and pain in burn patients. Okay, well, if it can help burn patients, it can help with mild transient anxiety. Lavender for when you go to have an IV put in for the pain and anxiety of getting punctured at a clinic. Effective lemongrass on anxiety. Effective sweet orange on anxiety. The effect of linalool, which is one of the major ingredients of both lavender and clary sage. This one's interesting because it's not just anxiety, it's social interaction and aggressive behavior. And may I suggest that perhaps we could benefit tremendously if our politicians learned about aromatherapy. Perhaps they would become more socially responsible. And as a matter of fact, one of the symbolic reasons why these politicians in India are given these huge garlands of very fragrant flowers, they are put over their head and to wear during their presentations. One of the symbolic ideas behind it is that the fragrance of the flowers will uplift them into a more spiritual state of mind. I think that there's some real benefit to considering that, or at least it's an interesting fantasy. Massage with aromatherapy for personality disorders, anxiety with myocardial infarction, so many kinds of studies here, lots and lots of things. So take a few minutes sometime during the week and you can digest that. And it will certainly confirm that your work with aromatherapy has scientific basis now, and very, very important. Okay, now before we start to close up, let's spend a couple more minutes here with the pharmacopoeia, because these are some really important essential oils. Just go ahead and open that file, and I would say that these four are good representatives of essential oils that are definitely going to have a significant effect on both anxiety and depression. And so we can take a quick look here at jasmine. And jasmine is a very intriguing essential oil. I'm not going to read any of the stuff about its botany or its history or anything like that. But it has the kind of paradoxical nature, because on the one hand, it makes people euphoric, and it's very relaxant, good for sleep. And on the other hand, it makes people very sensual, and it wakes them up. And it reduces our need for sleep. And that's actually a nice combination, as I mentioned before. And so it's a very sultry, exotic kind of perfume. Very expensive, because it takes so much to get a little bit of oil. And let's look at the therapeutic benefits. Jasmine has an affinity for female endocrine and reproductive system. So again, we see that it links back to well-being for women specifically. The Polynesian tribes, they've been using jasmine as a galactagogue to increase milk production. This is also paradoxical, because we see other studies that jasmine will stop milk production. Why we see these paradoxes, I'm not exactly sure. But one thing that everybody agrees on is that it's a strong aphrodisiac, and its aphrodisiacal properties work for both men and women. And I think that that's a nice thing that we can say about a lot of these aphrodisiac oils, is that even though a lot of them are very sweet and yin and feminine types of fragrances, they work on men also. And whether a man wants to wear them or just wants to partake, it works anyway. It works by both stimulating the nervous system and enhancing circulation. It's also very good for skin conditions, wound healing. It's relaxant to the nervous system and calming and sedative. So it's a very interesting kind of flower, because it's complicated, and it works in different ways at different times on different people. It's thought of very highly in Ayurveda and in TCM also. And if we scroll down here, there are some nice formulas. How do you use it? Jasmine oil is applied topically, and in this case, you can apply it pure as a single note perfume. It's so expensive, I don't think that people are going to be tempted to overdo it. But it's also so strong that you can dilute it easily, 10% in jojoba oil. Okay, so one drop jasmine, 10 drops jojoba, like that, and stretch it out so that you're still going to get a wonderful fragrance. That's a characteristic of a lot of the really strong, euphoric, exotic flowers, is that you don't have to use them as a 100% concentration. You can, they're safe, they work well like that, but you don't have to. They can also be stretched. Okay, so a drop or two in a relaxing, sensual bath, skin carrier oil, carrier oil for skin conditions. It's also very nice just as an ingredient to other massage oils for muscular tension and so forth. And then we see the blends here that, of course, remind us of things we've already heard about. So two parts jasmine, two parts bergamot, or any citrus. You could put neroli in there. Four drops clary sage. These are major euphoric mood-enhancing types of oils. And then very similar blend to what I mentioned before in the quick recipes I gave you, a few simple ideas for perfumes. A romantic blend, four drops of jasmine, four drops of sandalwood, two drops of rose. But these kind of blends are so wonderful to just experiment with, that you can just take your ingredients and just, you know, do it conservatively, because they're so expensive. But you can use practically any of these exotic oils in practically any combination, and it's going to be a wonderful experience. All right, we are running out of time. We have plenty more for next week, and you're going to learn a lot more just looking through the files. And so we should go ahead and start winding it down, and I will turn it back to you, Colleen, and let's see if there is anybody who is calling in, who would like to call in, and while you were calling for people to call, I will scan through the numerous comments that have come in on the webcast, and if nobody's calling, I'll just take some of those. So I'll turn it back to you.
Great. Thank you so much, David. That was just awesome. Please, if you have a question for David and you are on the telephone, please press 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are on the webcast, please type directly into the box. David will see those coming in.
All right. Good. Well, Colleen, do you want to go ahead and tell your story, or would you like me to mention this at a later time or comment on it?
Yeah, no, that doesn't have to be.
Okay, that's a very nice addition, though. Nice testimonial, and thank you. I'll just come back to it later. So we have a question here. What do I think of Angelica or Dong Quai for women's health? I don't see it mentioned on the list. Well, Dong Quai actually is a kind of Angelica, and Dong Quai is a major blood tonic for women, and there are so many herbs that I did not mention, but yes, absolutely. Dong Quai is a circulatory stimulant and also a blood tonic for women. It is a good herb. The only reason I didn't mention it was because there's so many others I didn't mention as well. Those were just things, first impression type of herbs that I was throwing out that are also very safe for a wide variety of other things. No specific reason I didn't mention it, but you are absolutely correct. Dong Quai is a major Chinese herb. There's also shatavari from the Ayurvedic tradition, the asparagus root, so many things. But the course is not really about herbal medicine. That's the primary reason. Are rosewood and rose otto also exotic oils? Yes, absolutely. Rose otto, O-T-T-O, is different than rose attar, A-T-T-A-R. Attar, attar, means that it is in a base of sandalwood. Although now, almost all attars are synthetic that are coming out of India, and you have to have nice family connection to actually get real sandalwood made into a real attar. Because it's so complicated, we're starting to make our own attars. We have one that's available, the agarwood attar. What we want is 100% certifiably organic and traceably sustainable ingredients, and that's fairly hard to do, but we do have that one, and we are in the process of getting a nice Australian sandalwood that we're going to be making attars with. Now, rosewood is an oil that comes from the Amazon that is highly endangered and illegal to actually harvest those trees. And so what is more commonly found is synthetic rosewood oil and the leaf of the rosewood oil that is also now starting to be distilled in a sustainable way in the Amazon, but also it comes from other parts of the world as well. And so the rosewood would be considered exotic. It's a major perfume ingredient, but it's also very complicated to find the real thing. Okay, Colleen, anybody on the phone, or should I just continue with a few of these webcast comments?
No, there isn't anyone on the phone. I can share my testimonial.
Okay, great, wonderful.
On the phone,
it's
sure.
It's such a good story that you're talking about here, and so relevant. I thought that I would just at least open it up and see if you wanted to. So. Please tell us what you would like to share about this, because it's very important, actually.
Okay, I have three different experiences actually to share, and I will share them quickly. Firstly, about the loss of a sense of smell, I really did experience that. I lived in two different countries, really. I'm from Canada, but I was living in the Netherlands at the time, and I came home on a holiday, and there were beautiful roses blossoming, and their smell was just divine near the beach. And, you know, from there, I went to Holland, and I lived near the beach there, and I went to the beach, and there were roses, and there were just like, there was no scent. And I was sad on the spot, and I lost my sense of smell for quite a while. I had a lot of work to do on it to get it back. Eventually, I came home and had some nice fragrance again from the roses, and everything went well. That's one. And secondly, I have done a rebirthing at a very small rebirthing with someone. Not small, it's a large event. But the most vital experience that I always remember from that is the chemical smell of the hospital. You know, when I was born, I'm from 1962, and they would, like, you know, in Canada anyway, take chemicals and clean you all up and take you from your mother, and it was just horrendous. And that smell was, you know, to experience that again, my brain knew immediately the whole experience, and I wanted to run outside, and I needed fresh air. And at that moment, I realized this is why I'm really, I need to be outdoors in the fresh air around the plants. It's vital to my health. That's the second one. And the third one is I used to be in a study of the philosophy of Sophia, the Anthroposophy. And there we learned that the human, the development of the human, the next stage is really all about the nose and our sense of smell. And that as more spiritual beings, we will be able to recognize more what's great for us. And that's it.
Oh, very, very interesting. Well, thank you, Colleen. Those are all very thought-provoking comments and experiences, memories. So thank you. And yes, I imagine that there's quite a lot of emotional memory that's stored in our brain that, you know, if we access it through some kind of regression, through deep meditation and so forth, that it would remind us of things that go way, way back. Our sense of smell is very primal, very primitive, and it goes all the way back into the womb. We probably even could remember what our mother was smelling if we went deeply enough. So lots of very interesting things about fragrance and consciousness to talk about. And we will continue with that next week. There's a lot of good comments here and questions. And some of these questions are actually more medical and some things that require a bit more time to unpack. And so what I'm going to do here is post a file. There was not a file this time because there weren't that many questions. We actually covered everything live last time. One thing I can answer very quickly here are mandarin orange, wild orange, tangerine, essential oils interchangeable in recipes that are used for diffusing? And I would say yes, absolutely. All the citruses are very interchangeable. And that's one of the reasons why I gave the botanical classifications in the earlier module, because if you will recall, I mentioned that we can study one botanical grouping of oils, and we can learn that they all have a lot of very similar characteristics, and they frequently have a lot of similar compounds, and they frequently have a lot of similarity in terms of their fragrance. And so therefore, when we talk about respiratory oils, we are talking about eucalyptus species, and even though there is difference of eucalyptus species, there's actually more similarity. And that applies also for frankincense, and that also applies for citruses and for conifer trees and for many larger groups like that. And so therefore, if you know what mandarin does in a bit of detail, then you also pretty much know what orange is going to do, and you pretty much know what grapefruit and lemon and neroli are going to do. Now, they all have specific differences, but aromatherapy is not really that precise. Okay, now when it comes to herbal medicine, it gets a lot more precise because there's going to be exact aspects of the plant. And so, for example, this orange peel that is dried in this particular way is completely different than this dried bitter orange fruit, you see, and they're going to taste completely different and have a completely different effect on the digestive system and so forth. With aromatherapy, it's going to be much more generalized, and so I would say yes, you can use them interchangeably. And whenever you don't know, you can always make them into a blend, and that way you can get the benefits of all of them at the same time. Okay. So that concludes our time. I hope you found it interesting. There's a lot of things to read, and then we're going to start going into a lot more recipes. Read the monographs. There's plenty of good information there on how you can start to do some blending. Keep me posted about what you are doing with your experiments. Keep sending those into the webcast. I will go ahead and respond to everybody in a file next week. Actually, that reminds me. Our schedule is different in November, and so we had class on the second, third, and fifth week, skipping for Thanksgiving. Next week, we also skip the first week as we do every first week. So our next class is actually on the 14th of December. So we're also going to have another week-long break. But for those of you listening in later, please continue to send in your comments on the webcast. And, of course, if you have specific medical issues, you can contact me at the email address. And I'll just say, have another wonderful 2 weeks of experimenting and blending. And I hope that you are all learning a lot and getting a lot of benefit for your health as well. And so with that, Colleen, I'll turn it back to you. I'll say goodnight to everybody everywhere. And thank you for your sincere interest in this subject. And I will also invite those of you who are on the call to join in the breakout group, as always, because there is so much you can learn from your fellow students. And so I'll go ahead and turn it back to you, Colleen, and say thank you again for hosting the call. And thank you also for your wonderful personal testimonials that are very important for everybody to consider.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, David, from all of us to you. Much joy, and we will see you in 2 weeks.